And we thank you so much for being with us. Jason Ross, Damian Barlin, the Lowdown, back together, back in effect. And we thank you for spending part of your Thursday here. And if you want to spend your weekend with Dierks Bentley, well, you can't spend the whole weekend, but we can send you to the concert. Mm-hmm. Spending the weekend would be inappropriate. but you could definitely go to the concert. We're going to have tickets. He's going to be here on Saturday at the Toyota Amphitheater. We will have those coming your way, let's say, at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. So 1 hour from now, we'll get you those tickets to see Dierks Bentley. If you missed any part of the first hour, you want to jump in some of the conversation about LeBron, D. Wade, the Cavs, the Oakland Raiders, check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe to the podcast. You could do it on iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast platform. Or you can go to KHDK.com immediately following the show and get caught up on everything that you may have missed. We'll get into Morris Smith's remarks regarding an NFL stoppage coming up after the 2020 season in just a heartbeat. Jason, I came across an article. We talked about Josh Rosen the last time we were together, particularly about some of the remarks that he made about college athletics, school and football not mixing together. I actually completely understood and to a certain degree agreed with what he was saying, but he took quite a beating for it. Now, you know, he's a unique guy in that he seems to be extremely talented, but the scouts, coaches, analysts seem to be up and down on how they covered him. Now, at least heading into the college football season, which is only a couple of weeks away here at this point, he's the second best quarterback in the nation, maybe?
Yeah, I mean,
first or second?
It depends on how he grades out. But, yeah, there's plenty of guys. Allen at Wyoming, Sam Darnold at USC, you know.
But he's up there.
He's definitely on the list. He's going to be a guy he's first-round, high first-round talent.
So, for whatever reason, there was a report on Bleacher Report today, and I'll read it to you as it says. NFL scouts, coaches, and teammates say Josh Rosen comes off as uncoachable, amongst other things. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah,
I don't understand how the thing that stood out to me is uncoachable, because I feel like there's only one person who can say, "Yeah, Josh Rosen is uncoachable."
Jim Mora.
It's
a coach.
Yeah, this right. coach, that's it. No one else. Who else can say that?
Yeah.
Maybe his high school coach can say that, but that's not who that was attributed to. This is attributed to, how does somebody come across as uncoachable? I have interacted with people who I think, okay, they don't want my advice, or they don't want my help, or they just don't believe a damn thing I'm saying to them. But that's from my interactions with them. I don't know how do you look from the outside and look at a kid like Josh Rosen, who seems to be pretty damn good on the field, and go, oh, that kid's not coachable.
Yeah. Unless they're getting intel from people inside UCLA or other spots or other rumors. Who knows?
That's normally not something you get, though, from.
That's true.
Because.
From a scout or from.
I mean, you know, I mean, Pete Carroll's the only guy I can ever remember going, yeah, no.
He's not ready.
He's not ready. And he did that with Mark Sanchez. Mm-hmm. Maybe he was right.
Maybe. Even though I don't know what another year would have been.
Sanchez didn't do too bad his first couple of his career actually worked in reverse.
Right.
He was really good at the beginning. And then just after those couple of years there where New York was in the AFC Championship. But I can't remember another occasion where a coach openly came out and, no, this is a bad idea, or no, he's uncoachable, or no, he's got an attitude problem. Because you want your players to go to the draft. You want your players to be drafted as high as possible, because when you go sit in that kid's living room next spring, hey, our quarterback's about to be taken number one overall. Yeah, we'll get you to the NFL. We know what we're doing here.
If the scouts and other people are saying it because of his comments, then that's crazy. If they've got intel on other things, that's one thing. But you better have all your facts right, and I'm not saying they don't. I don't know the answer to it, but it's just it shouldn't be just on what he said, you know, a week or two ago. That to me,
yeah,
was
that's silly.
His opinion. I don't think he was off base at all. Some have agreed, some have disagreed. I think it's difficult to be a student athlete, college student athlete. Yep. I really do.
I think it's difficult to be a college student. Period.
That's true.
When you factor in the athlete part, yeah, I think it does make it substantially more difficult. This is 2 weeks before the college football season kicks off. We got 2 weeks to fill.
Right.
We need something to talk about. So I guess if, you know, trying to play down this young man is the way that some reports have to go, because it seems to have been doing that quite a bit over the course of the last week since he gave that interview. First of all, I think he should stop talking to Bleacher Report.
Yeah, they're out to get him.
Yeah, like every time something comes out from Bleacher Report, it doesn't end well for him.
Yeah, I just say be great against A&M.
And that's what I was just about to say. This all gets quieted down really, really quickly.
Yeah.
If he plays well.
That first weekend, they actually play on Sunday. It's a separate game. It's like its own little block down there at the Rose Bowl. They'll play Sunday against A&M. Be great.
Your other boy, he's already mad. He's mad at everybody.
Who's this?
Nick Saban. Nick Saban, yes. He hates you. He hates me. He hates every single person listening.
Mm-hmm.
I'll prove it. He went through all of that just to ultimately answer the question.
Why? And that's what's interesting to me. He has that reputation. Pop. Other people have the reputation of that. But what sparks it? Seemingly innocent enough question. Or is it that you're questioning a player that, hey, some people would say he's going to be great or not so great. Is he not living up to what even Nick Saban thought he was? Or is he over? Just, I don't know why that set him off, but sometimes those things happen.
People like to put Saban and Belichick in the same category, and I don't think they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because Saban will at least, you know, as you heard there in the last 15 seconds, you know, that was over a minute long.
Yeah.
He only actually answered the question for 15 seconds. I mean, he'll give you something, even if it's a you know, those guys are – most of those guys out there in those pools are writers.
Mm-hmm.
They just need – he's playing well. He picks up his blocks. You know, if they're doing a story on a particular play, they don't need a lot from the coach. Would they like it? Sure.
Yeah.
They can get two or three lines. I'm sure they're happy. But with Belichick, you get nothing.
Right.
Like, I still to this day can't figure out why if you're a – Patriots beat writer, why do you try to talk to him?
Yeah.
Like, why he's already being a total tool.
Yeah.
Like, he's short answering questions. He's being just, like, why bother? Just don't go.
Yeah.
Don't waste your time. Go talk to someone else. Go talk to whoever else you're allowed to talk to. Because you are literally, week after week after week, practice after practice after practice, you're getting nothing,
yeah,
and you're making yourself look stupid by continuing to ask questions.
Well, and the funny thing on that quote, too, I think from Saban is, you know, I read this and I hear this, and it's like, oh, so you do follow it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when a lot of times people are like, I don't know what's being said. I don't even pretend to know. Nobody know. I don't read this stuff. Yeah, you do.
Thinking, you know, we played that clip earlier from the Stan song, and now I'm just thinking about that line. But Stan, why are you so mad?
Right.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, yeah. Nick, why are you so mad?
You haven't had a game. You didn't lose. You didn't win.
He lost his last game. Maybe that's what he's mad about.
Still mad from that one?
He's still angry about
Clemson.
Look, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But, man, like, that's why I worry about college coaches because of stuff like that. Like, if he's still hanging on to that national championship game, and I firmly believe.
Oh, you know he is.
Exactly. Dude, I don't know for sure because I didn't go to medical school. I can't imagine that's good for one's health.
Yeah,
because
he could win the next three, and he's still going to stew over that one that he didn't get. It's just the way they work. They're like that. But other coaches, that's where college has it great. He can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what could Nick Saban do at a press conference that gets him in any kind of hot water?
Oh, nothing.
Right.
Nothing.
And that was really minor. I mean, that wasn't really much. But that's not the first time we've played audio from him. It won't be the last time. He's got control of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get a kick out of him. Like, his personality is legitimately dry.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bill Belichick actually has a personality. He just doesn't let people see it.
Mm-hmm.
He's
more guarded.
Right. We know Greg Popovich does.
Mm-hmm.
Because every once in a while he lets us see it.
Yeah.
Nick Saban, I don't think I think that's his personality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he is just a legitimately dry person.
Mm-hmm.
He's the substitute teacher in Ferris Bueller.
Right.
Like, Bueller.
Yeah.
Bueller, he's just, what's his name? What is that guy's name?
Ben Stein.
Yeah. That's just him.
Yeah.
Like, that's legit. It's not guarded. It's not, I'll let you see it every once in a while.
He's not putting on a face.
No, that's just him.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I tend to respect it a little bit more. Damaris Smith, the head of the NFL Players Association, and this is a story that is going to get a whole lot of legs as this day moves along, and it's actually something that we've talked about a couple of times here on the Lowdown. He spoke with the MMQB. He spoke with, my favorite, Albert Breer, about a potential NFL work stoppage. Here is what the head of the NFL Players Association, D. Smith, had to say. I'm sorry, there's a just jotted down. There's a history of owners colluding.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know why that seems so prevalent to me right now at this exact moment. I have no idea why.
Yeah.
I just jotted owners' history of collusion.
Mm-hmm.
Just going to leave that out there. Do you know what he's referring to when he says they lied about the uncapped year? I remember the uncapped year, and I remember teams suffering penalties because of it years later. But I don't know why owners would lie about it, because that wasn't a benefit for the owners, because they wound up. I remember the Redskins paid a huge price. The Cowboys paid a price. They had to cut a massive amount of salary. And I know this was all related to the uncapped year, but I don't recall how the players were involved and why Demora Smith, who represents the players, would say that they lied to us about that. Did that?
I don't recall the facts of that either.
I can't remember the negative reaction. I can't remember the negative effects that would have hit players. I do remember it hitting the owners, though.
Right.
And I don't imagine that they lied to each other. Well, maybe they did lie to each other. I don't really know, but I don't think that's what he was referring to. Obviously, the biggest note there is the term, when Albert Breer asked a question about a work stoppage, is a virtual certainty.
Yeah, 2021, right? Is that what he said?
Yeah, after the 2020 season headed into the next year.
Yeah. And to me, we've talked about this before, but the things that I think frustrate fans who use this as their form of entertainment is stuff like this, is when we can't relate to salaries, we just can't, and then when there's a separation from wealthy owners and wealthy players. Both are going to make a lot of money here, and I think everybody should fight for their rights, players and owners included. But us as consumers of these sporting events, that's always a hard one for me to understand. Like, just find a way to make it work. That makes everybody somewhat. There's some giving, and I know Demora Smith said, like, well, the owners didn't really have to take the bad parts of the last deal. Mm-hmm. Players did. Mm-hmm. Well. You agreed to it.
That's your fault. Yeah,
yeah, you agreed to it.
That's. I remember when the deal got signed. The first conversation that I had with someone, like the players are going. They're going to hate this in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably hating it now, but they felt like the NFL is so different, and this is what we talked about, and this is what Richard Sherman talked about. I don't remember what forum he was on. I think he was with Josina Anderson when he was talking about a potential work stoppages. The difference between the NBA and the NFL is, in the NFL, there's haves and have-nots. And the guys who, I mean, there are guys who don't make a lot of money in the NFL. And there are guys who make $30 million in the NFL, $20 million a year.
And the lack of guarantees.
You know, and there's something in the middle. And then there's that. So when you think about what the initial issues, hearing someone like Richard Sherman, who will have a voice in, you know, 3 years for that Players Association, when you hear things like him talking openly about guaranteed contracts and the need for guaranteed contracts, especially following the signings in basketball of James Harden and Steph Curry and John Wall and all of those guys, it's going to take a collective effort from every single NFL player, and I'm not confident the NFL can pull that off.
Mm-hmm. To get their stands. Yeah,
because you would to pull off to be able to get because I think there's two things that they're going to be looking for, and this ties nicely to what we're going to talk about at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. The guaranteed contracts, that's a no-brainer. They're going to have to threaten not to play, or they're going to have to actually not play.
Correct.
In order to get those guaranteed contracts. And then Roger Goodell. The power that Roger Goodell has to change. And I think every single NFL player will agree with that. But remember, Roger Goodell works for those owners. Those owners aren't going to want to make that concession. So that's another thing. I can't imagine two more important issues than those two that the NFLPA will be fighting for. You can put, you know, cutting preseason games down there is something, you know. But in terms of we can't make a concession on this, I think it's those two issues.
Yeah, and if it's amongst those two, I'm fighting for guaranteed contracts.
100%.
Yeah, that's number one for me.
100%. But this Ezekiel Elliott case could be, I'm trying to find, this could be like very literally a landmark situation, a landmark case for the NFL where it's referenced later, because there's so much that we can pick apart with Ezekiel Elliott's six-game suspension, and we'll do that in the 2 o'clock hour. But as it relates to other suspensions, Josh Brown, Greg Hardy. I know Greg Hardy was 10 games. It got appealed down to 4. I mean, what does it say if Greg Hardy gets 4 and Ezekiel Elliott winds up getting 4? I mean, there's so many different things to pick apart, and there's this Mr. Henderson, mm-hmm. right? He's the guy. Does anyone believe that Roger Goodell still doesn't have the final say in this? Wasn't there a arbitrator for Deflategate?
Yes.
How'd that work out?
Right.
Because then it get to a point where one court said, no, you can't suspend him. This doesn't fall under this is absurd. This completely violates the collective bargaining agreement. Then there was another judge who said, oh, no, you're absolutely within your rights to suspend him. So we just went from court to court to court until ultimately what happened?
The NFL got the one they wanted.
Roger Goodell got what the hell he wanted.
Yeah.
In the end, Roger Goodell is going to get what he wanted Roger Goodell is going to get what he wants if a majority of the owners, a handful in particular, are pushing for him to get what he wants.
Right, but in this case, the number one head honcho that we always talk about that really runs everything is Jerry, and this directly affects him.
And Jerry is paying for the sins of Deflategate.
Mm-hmm.
He is absolutely paying because we know now. We talked about it the day it happened, and then it had been put out there later in the weekend, and we talked with Drew Davidson, who covers the Dallas Cowboys. We've had him on this show a number of times, about Jerry pushed for a stiff suspension and a stiff penalty to Robert Kraft, the New England Patriots, and Tom Brady. And now it is biting him square in his ass.
Right.
And I don't know how he gets out of this, but that's again, it ties into why this Ezekiel Elliott thing could be a landmark case for the NFL, for Roger Goodell, and for the NFL Players Association.
Yeah.
Again, we'll get into all of the details about that and the uncomfortableness of the Ezekiel Elliott suspension in that case at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. There's actually 3 football games tonight. We'll talk about those at 2:30 as well. The return of Jay Cutler. How excited are you? Are you more excited than Jay? Are you more excited to watch Jay Cutler play tonight than Jay Cutler actually is to play tonight?
I'll say yes, but I'm not even excited to see Jay Cutler.
Well, he's not excited to play either, so it's probably
just so uninspiring, right? And that's what the Dolphins are doing. I feel for Matt Moore. They haven't had a franchise quarterback since Dan Marino. I don't know that either one is. They're not. But just, it's a mess.
I wonder, Matt Moore, is there any way? Jay Cutler's the starter, right?
Like, you pay him $10 million, he's your starter.
At some point, though, if he's bad, do you go, we got to go? I'll go back to the Mitch Trubisky thing. When Mitch Trubisky played his first preseason game, I think he plays, he doesn't play tonight. He plays on Saturday. I don't understand why coaches, before preseason games are played, before you've played an entire practice, why you try to establish a depth chart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm fine if you say, well, this is our preseason depth chart. But what coaches do and organizations do is they come out, and in the case of the Chicago Bears, they say, well, Mitch isn't, he's not our starting quarterback. He's not. Who is it? Mike Glennon.
Mm-hmm.
We brought him in from Tampa Bay. We expect him to. He's our starting quarterback.
And Mark Sanchez is getting reps, too.
Okay, Mark Sanchez is getting reps. Yeah. Nothing like the butt fumble getting some run in the preseason. Great. Okay, out of those three, who had the best first game?
Trubisky, right?
Mitch Trubisky.
Yeah.
Now, let's say, for argument's sake, he looks fine during practice. He looks well. Let's say week 2 comes around. Mitch Trubisky has the best game. Let's say week 3 comes around, and you start to look at Mitch Trubisky and think he's the best quarterback on this roster. Do you just have to not play him because 3 weeks ago, before you ever watched these guys in a live game situation, you said, well, he's not our starting quarterback?
All right.
I don't understand why we establish these depth charts, why coaches establish this with these rookie quarterbacks before they ever play.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could say going in or leading right now, this guy might be leading, or you don't even have to say.
No, you don't. All you have to do is Mike Glennon is starting week 1, and I know so much of this and completely understand. So much of this is about ego.
Yeah.
So much of this is about guys need that comfort. You know, I got to know that I'm starting. We've heard quarterbacks say that. It might have even have been Mike Glennon. I can't remember who it was, but I know it was this year where a quarterback says, "Yeah, it feels good heading into training camp knowing I'm the starter."
Yeah,
like you can kind of approach things differently. And I remember hearing that, thinking, "Why? Like, shouldn't you always compete?" Was it T.J. Carey who told us when mm-hmm. we were at training camp? There's position battles every day, every practice, every preseason game.
Yeah, that's healthy for a team.
Why wouldn't you take the same approach?
Yeah, I think, who was it? Cleveland. Yeah, Hugh Jackson said going into the first preseason game, Osweiler was going to be the starter for that game. It mm-hmm. wasn't any mm-hmm. other profound, like, and at that time, he hadn't really been working with the number one. So he just made a decision to start him in the first preseason game, got him the number one reps the week leading into the preseason game, but he technically on the depth chart wasn't considered number one before that. You can make moves like that.
Could Phil do a better job than Hugh running the Cleveland Browns?
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah, Hugh's pretty good, I think. Just the organization's a mess.
We'll come back. Jason is going to explain the Major League Baseball trade deadline to me next. Every time you say that, I think you've messed up. Every time I hear seven flags,
yeah,
it's like, why do you guys keep saying that? Pay attention, people. The 1140 Street Team, sponsored by Loyal Roots, will be at Buffalo Wild Wings tonight. Come find the 1140 tent for awesome prizes from 4 to 6 p.m. That's Buffalo Wild Wings, 1168 Galleria Boulevard in Roseville. Coming up in 27 minutes, we'll have your chance to win tickets to see Dierks Bentley this Saturday at the Toyota Amphitheater. Man, we've been going hard on these country concerts.
Yeah.
Talk to somebody. I saw 2 Chainz last night.
You did?
I saw 2 Chainz at Ace of Spades. It was my first trip to Ace of Spades. For some reason, I've never been there before.
How come you've gone from, like, not going to concerts to now going all the time?
You know what? I actually asked myself that same question.
Did you out loud?
I did. No, I did. Yeah. I was like, because I think there was a point last night surrounded by the aroma in the air mm-hmm. That's legal yeah. now. I was like, dude, when did I start doing this again? And I realized I did virtually nothing in Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I'm like making up for time, because we spent time living in Knoxville, which, you know, I wasn't going out. Like, you know, I didn't even know outside of Pat and mm-hmm. the dogs. Like, I didn't know
and
people there. Like, I knew this. Yes, the hot tub indeed.
Yeah.
I knew people associated with the program. Like, I didn't know people who I was spending time with. Same with Connecticut. People on the East, it's hard to make friends mm-hmm. on the East Coast, especially the Northeast, because, like, people legitimately have people have a different attitude. Like, their attitudes are very, very different. Like, they don't want to be friends. They don't, like, they have their circle of people that they've known for however long. I didn't really, like, make a lot of friends there. Like, I met a handful of people I really liked and enjoyed. A lot of the people I met were associated with basketball and things like that. So I just feel like now that I'm around, you know, everyone I'm around now I knew before I left, mm-hmm. most of them. I'm just, like, a little bit closer with them now, and I just spend more time with them. I think it was just I didn't do a lot when I was away from here.
Yeah.
And now it's like,
now it's a regular thing for you. It's
now
cool.
Now I'm going out I'm not going out all the time. I'm going out a whole lot more than I ever have before.
Yeah.
But
2 concerts this week, right?
Yeah, Kendrick Lamar on Sunday, which was freaking incredible.
Yeah.
It was absolutely spectacular. And then, 2 Chainz last night. And God bless this dude, man. He broke his leg a couple of weeks ago. So he does his show in a pink wheelchair, a customized pink wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty incredible. I'll show you a clip of it. And it didn't bother anybody. Like, he's just in a wheelchair. He's got 2 sexy nurses pushing him around as, you know, his dancers.
2 Chainz, 1 chair.
2 Chainz, indeed. So, no, it was fun. It was, like I said, it was my first. I don't know why I've never been to Ace of Spades before, but I hadn't. But it's a cool little tiny venue to watch an act. I like it. It was fun. But Kendrick was incredible.
I bet. Golden. Is that the best one you've seen?
In terms of a hip-hop concert?
Well, no, I'm thinking of Golden 1, because you loved...
Oh, that's hard to say.
When New Kids and that group, you just had a fun time.
They were all really different, right? Like, New Kids on the Block was, in Boys to Men, and that was nostalgia, right? So that had a feel to it. And then you're dying to say something. What? What do you want to say? Like, I see you.
No, I don't want to say anything. I just want you to say... What you liked more, Kendrick Lamar or New Kids on the Block?
So Bruno Mars was great. Again, it was an entirely
I forgot about Bruno, a
different concert. And then Kendrick, I liked Kendrick more probably. But the thing with Kendrick was, like, YG, like, I didn't even watch the first act. Like, I had people over to the house. Like, I had a whole bunch of people who were going to the show just come over because I live, you know, 10 minutes from the arena, and we had a couple of drinks, and then a couple of drinks turned into, hey, it's 7:30, the show started. Like, we should call the car and go, call the Lyft and go. And so we skipped the first act.
Okay.
And then, you know, YG came out there, and it was fine. But Kendrick was incredible, and there was a when Humble came on, he started, and he gets to a point, I think it was My Left Stroke Just Went Viral, and he lets the crowd pick up. But the crowd sings the rest of the song. Mm-hmm. Like, they sing the first verse, the rest of the first verse, the chorus, and then the entire second verse.
Oh, wow.
And then he do the sit down, be humble, and then when he hits that, the beat starts again, and then he starts the song all over, and he does it.
Oh, wow.
And I had seen clips of certain towns. I know Oakland, they had kind of picked up on like a couple of the verses, and they had kind of run along. I don't know if a city had ever done the whole song and then he reset it and did it again. Huh. Like it was, and it was just him. It was just a stage with videos and lights. Like it was incredible. And there was a point where, when the crowd is singing, like I'm looking around and the place is sold out. I've never been to a hip hop concert that was sold out like that with, you know, 13 or 14,000, however many that place can fill with the stage set up. But it was, I mean, diverse.
Yeah.
Young, old, black, white, Mexican, Asian, just
that was
everything
Sunday, right?
Was there. That was Sunday.
Was Lady Gaga Monday or Tuesday?
Lady Gaga was Tuesday.
Okay, gosh, wow.
Yeah, and then I didn't go to that one, but I was looking at clips of it, and then again, man, okay, look, we'll be the broken record. That freaking arena, if it's not there, I don't know that these acts are coming.
Oh, you know that. No way. No way.
And it sounds, we've probably all seen shows at Arco or Sleep Train, Power Balance. It was not fun. That's why acts stopped coming. Right. That's why they started going to the amphitheater out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Or they just went to, Mountain View.
Right.
You know, they would go out there. But to have Kendrick one day and 3 days later, you know, Lady Gaga, there's a stretch in October where Janet Jackson is here, and then The Weeknd is here right after that. It's I won't stop singing the praises of that arena.
Yeah, and just even if we just do a month's worth, you've got those two. Bruno was in this kind of this last month.
Yeah,
Tim and Faye. I mean, just a broad spectrum. I mean, big names: John Mayer, Hall & Oates. I mean, they're all over the place.
Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yeah,
went to that one too. It's just been whoever is in charge of that has just done a hell of a job. But it was. Yeah, it was fun. I don't know how we got there. I think you were asking why I was going to so many damn concerts all of a sudden. But, yeah, I guess it's just I'm making up for lost times, maybe.
Yeah, that's good.
I love live music, though. And I think these guys put on a pretty good show.
Yeah.
Kendrick's show was better than I imagined because I was like, it's just a rapper. Like, what's he really going to be able to do? It's not like he's going to have a band up there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really good.
Good.
And the crowd was super into it.
Nice.
You've stalled long enough.
Dang it.
I know that's what you were trying to do through that entire process. Can you explain the Major League Baseball trade deadline to me?
Not really, but I'll try.
Okay.
We've already had the deadline come and go. Now
yes, that's the part I'm confused by.
The waiver deadline, right, where a team can technically waive a player that they're trying to, quote-unquote, trade. And if someone, I say trying to trade, they could just be literally waiving them. But if someone claims him on waivers, the only way they could get him is you have to trade them to them if you're trying to trade them. So if they clear everybody, then you can now trade them. And why, if you have a deadline when this is allowed, I don't have a great answer. It's strange. It's happened before. It will happen again. I don't get it. I don't know why baseball does it this way.
So Verlander still, like, he still could be traded.
Rumored.
And now, and so Stanton cleared waivers.
So that means nobody claimed him.
Because he's owed a lot of money.
Right. So now he can be traded anywhere. Can be.
So he couldn't be traded anywhere before.
Let's say the Giants claimed him. The only way he could go, or you could let him go to the Giants, literally, which why would you just let him go if you're trying to trade him? Then the only one you could work out a trade with would be the Giants, if they were the one team that claimed him.
Now that is unlike any other waiver claim in any other sport, right?
Yeah, that I know.
Because if you get picked up on waivers like in basketball,
mm-hmm.
The team just pays the salary.
Right, he's yours.
And that's why a lot of guys wind up clearing waivers is because they were cut because of their contracts.
Matt
Barnes. I'm not paying that.
Just
right.
Gone. All right, Warriors, you sign up for whatever you agreed to. Kings still are committed to what they agreed to earlier.
I remember when that CBA was done, the latest CBA. What was that rule? Amnesty.
Yeah.
They had amnesty clauses.
A one-time amnesty.
But they had to clear waivers. And was it – I feel like it was Chauncey Billups. And if I'm wrong, forgive me. But I think it was Chauncey who came out and said – don't even contemplate picking me up on waivers because he was amnestied and he wanted to go play wherever he wanted to. But he said, don't pick me up off waivers because in basketball, you just pick them up and you pay them.
Right.
I guess baseball, it's entirely different.
Yeah. Weird rules.
New Kids on the Block was pretty good. Nice. This text right here, I love this text from Dan. I'm from Newtown, Connecticut, and trust me, I still have no interest in meeting new people. Here's another one. Connecticut sucks. Source: Northeast Connecticut. Yeah, it's from Northeast Connecticut. Yeah, there's it's entirely different feel, entirely different vibe. We'll come back. You know, there's one story I've been kind of anxious to talk about. I was hoping we'd have an update on it. We don't. That's the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. But we'll tell you what we found out next here on the Lowdown. Back here on the Lowdown, we thank you so much for being with us. Jason Ross, Damian Barling, we've got your chance to see Dierks Bentley at the Toyota Amphitheater this Saturday coming up in just about 12 minutes. Stick around. We're also going to dig into the uncomfortable case of Ezekiel Elliott's 6-game suspension. I think there's a lot here to break down. There's a lot of back and forth going on between the NFL and the NFL Players Association. You heard from Demora Smith a few moments ago as he did an interview with the MMQB. The focus wasn't really about Ezekiel Elliott and this suspension and the back and forth between the NFL and the NFLPA, but there was a conversation about a work stoppage after the 2020 season in which D. Smith called a work stoppage a virtual certainty. I think a lot of how this Ezekiel Elliott case transpires, even though we're still – you know, what, 3 years away from a potential work stoppage. I think a lot of how this case transpires during the appeal process could say a lot into what the players push for when that collective bargaining agreement comes up again at the end of the 2020 season. So we'll dig into that again just about 11 minutes as we kick off the top of the 2 o'clock hour. One of the downsides to being away for a few days, that Ric Flair story sucked. Like,
yeah.
Chris had kind of texted me about it, like, hey, are you following this Ric Flair thing? And I knew he had been in the hospital. I didn't realize, like, there's a fear he's going to die, which Ric Flair has been a huge wrestling name for, you know, since the 70s. And I don't know why, but over, you know, he stopped wrestling in a meaningful manner at WrestleMania, was it 24, 23 or 24, so that was almost 10 years ago. Now, he's wrestled matches in smaller companies, but he hasn't done anything truly meaningful, you know, in 10 years in terms of, particularly with what he's done with the WWE. But I feel like he's a bigger star now than he ever was in his wrestling career. He was a huge star in the 80s, but he wasn't as big as Hogan. He's probably universally respected by more wrestlers today than any other wrestler in history.
Why do you think that is, though? Both parts of that. Why is he so respected, and why is he bigger now?
I think he's so respected, one, because he's a great wrestler, he was a great talker, and, you know, he's always compared to Hogan, right? And Hogan, I think, is a bigger household name, and he's a bigger star than Ric Flair was. But the perception on Hulk Hogan is always he's been a jerk, a D-bag. Like, he's not been a good person to deal with. He hasn't been willing to help younger people. He's always kind of been trying to keep himself above everybody else, whereas Ric Flair has been the opposite. He's been willing to help people, bring people along, teach them, mentor them, do things like that. And you'll hear from guys like Triple H and Shawn Michaels and all those guys, Stone Cold Steve Austin, who are stars in their own right. They've had those experiences with Ric Flair. So that's the respect category. In terms of being a star, I don't have an answer. Like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, people were quoting the – you know, that his famous line, which was, by the way back in like 1986 or 85 when he first uttered, I'm the limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, wheeling dealing, son of a gun.
Yeah.
And it's
now teams want him to speak. Atlanta Falcons did.
He spoke for the Falcons. He the guy from the Colts was doing it. So he went to see the Colts.
He just voiced the PGA stuff we talked about.
Yeah. When the Charlotte Hornets before, you know, the Charlotte Hornets became the New Orleans Hornets and Charlotte Hornets again, and they the woo, that's Ric Flair. It was after free throws. I think, I don't know if you still hear it, but I know you'd hear the woo. He would be the hype man for games in Charlotte. I don't know what his ties are to Cleveland, but he's in Cleveland all the time now. I don't know if it's just because he's friends with LeBron or what it is. But Ric Flair's the guy who, it's so funny, he'll be out with a current crop of WWE superstars, of WWE wrestlers, that are on TV 2 to 3 times a week with an audience of 5 million combined. And those guys are never acknowledged. When ESPN, you know, pans the camera and TNT pans the camera, it's like, look, the Nature Boy is here.
Right.
And it's like, I think it's so amazing to me that he's become that caliber of star now so far after his wrestling career ended. And there hasn't been any good news coming out of this. So it appears it's still really, really serious. I know he had a heart issue at one point. Now there's talks of kidneys. I know his fiance, which is probably like his 7th or 8th fiance, is saying he's having like a number of organ failures. And yeah, I don't want Rick to go. I'm not ready for Rick to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need him to kind of pull through this one. He's got a big 30 for 30 that ESPN did that I think is coming up this fall, in which, you know, his life is covered, his career is covered, but maybe that will give us some insight into how this thing happened with professional athletes, where suddenly he's a great promo guy. He always has been. He has the ability to sell, which is, I'm assuming, why all of these sports teams love having him out there.
Yeah. Well, that's a testament for them to do a 30 for 30 on him compared to any of the other wrestlers.
Yeah. I mean, there isn't one on Hogan. There's not one on The Rock, who's a far bigger star than.
You're making that one.
I am. I'm working. I'm trying to get funding.
Yeah.
As we speak. So I really hope Rick can pull through whatever's going on with him. I hope they could pull through. Some news came out of the McGregor Mayweather thing yesterday.
It's coming up.
I told you that. It's 9 days away, and you were like, wait, is that close?
Yeah,
it's a week from Saturday. They're going from, 10-ounce gloves to 8-ounce gloves.
I don't know. There's nothing for me.
It still favors Floyd, but I guess, you know, they're kind of splitting the difference, I guess, to a certain degree, because Conor's used to fighting with 4-ounce gloves. I don't think, first of all, this just exemplifies the silliness of the Nevada State Athletic Commission, who have just completely just bent over and have been spanked by Floyd Mayweather through this whole process.
Right.
This is just absurd. Like, I don't know how any person in their right mind could ever take an athletic commission seriously.
Yeah.
Given what's going on with the Nevada State Athletic Commission now and what went on with the Houston Athletic Commission when they cleared Kimbo Slice to fight a guy who wasn't a fighter, and Kimbo Slice dies some 3 months later, discovering a big giant hole in his heart or a hole in his kidney or something like that, which the athletic commission couldn't determine that 3 months earlier. Like this just developed. It's just silly. We're going to get into Ezekiel Elliott and what's going on there with the NFL and the Players Association. And we got these Dierks Bentley tickets for you as we kick off the final hour next.